Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you live every Thursday. And today is Thursday. It's 7 o'clock. And we are here to talk to you about business and all the things that make a company, an organization, an enterprise, small, medium, or large, all the things that make it really work and thrive, even in the face of a pandemic. So we've had some very interesting shows in addressing the pandemic and looking at the new future that our global situation has created for us. So today we are going to continue that path, but before we even go down talking about marketing and all the great things that organizations do when we introduce our guests, you first have to know who my co-pilot is. She's always here. Lori?
Oh, am I here? Yes. Ha-ha. Yes, Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. And, you know, Ted and I decided to put a podcast together because I'm a little bit creative, and he is the business head and does a lot of changes with businesses and works with Fortune 500 companies, and I thought it was really important that entrepreneurs have, you know, two people that they can go to for any questions or experiences, and we have fun doing it. Thank you, Ted.
No question. No, thank you. Definitely, this has been fun, and we've known one another for years before we even started this, so, yeah.
Correct.
This is just an extension of our business relationship and making things work and having an impact. A creative, alchemistic, if that's even a word, impact.
It is now.
So why don't you tell everyone about our very special and talented guest that you also know personally. Why don't you introduce him?
Okay, so tonight we have Bobby Suey, and Bobby has a program, I guess I'll call it a program, called the Same Circle Method, and I found Bobby about a year ago when I was delving into learning how to do my own social media instead of paying to have it farmed out and not getting results, and we spoke on the phone. I wasn't quite ready. A lot of things going on, and then as the Same Circle Method goes, it circled back to me. So I reached out, and I said, hey, Bobby, I'm ready, and I'm going to let Bobby tell you a little bit, but to validate what Bobby does, after he introduces himself, we're going to talk a little bit about my social media numbers and what he did for me. So, Bobby, please introduce yourself.
Hey, Ted and Lori, thank you for having me. I'm just a regular guy who is looking to add value to the world, and in this world that I'm adding value to, I operate in a little corner where I provide a coaching program for interior designers to help them develop their influence on social media so that they can land the right projects, the right clients that will allow them to flex their genius and just be themselves in their best selves in their careers. So that coaching program is called the Same Circle Method.
Okay. And
Where are you from? Where are you located? Just so people have a little bit of a sense of who you are, where you're from originally, and what made you get into this?
Yeah, well, I would take it back to a couple of career pivots ago, a while back when I was working in the corporate world. I started out in many different marketing and sales career paths in several different industries, from the tech industry to the music industry to working at a commercial design firm. And I think it was at the commercial design firm when this fire really lit me up, you know, inside, where I knew I had to figure something out. And it was due to a trigger of me being fired and let go. I was heading up the marketing department for this commercial design firm. And at that time, there was the amount of technology for expressing yourself on social, to promote yourself on social, wasn't at its all-time peak, right? So back then, nobody even knew what WordPress was. LinkedIn was barely getting its bearings. And here I was, having to figure out a challenge, having to spearhead a new innovative way to generate leads and sales consultations for the firm. And they basically had me figure that out. So long story short, I couldn't figure it out. And I just remember walking into my boss's office. He looked at me, he said, "Have a seat." You know, he took his glasses off and set it on the table and said, "Bobby, I just can't afford you right now." And that was that. So I was definitely really let down. I think I let myself down. I felt like I asked myself why I couldn't figure this out. And I think that was when I decided to really do something about it. Now, I didn't immediately figure it out. I went to work for a couple of different companies after that, such as, you know, working at Universal Music. I was promoting music artists and learning about entertainment marketing and how to properly promote the quirky characteristics of an artist, all the way to buying lead generation for an enterprise resources planning software company. So I think I just wore many hats in trying to figure this out, and from many different perspectives. And it wasn't until I finally left corporate to kind of go out on my own and carve my own path did I start consulting on what I knew in marketing. So I started out with my sister's friends and her, you know, her husband, my brother-in-law, all his buddies. They were in contracting, and so they came to me for advice, and I started my consulting gig from that. Then coming to realize that they all needed sort of like an agency kind of outsourced solution. So that's when I started an agency, a marketing agency that served the built environment, from interior designers to architects to remodelers and design build firms. And so that's where I really cut my teeth for another 5 or 6 years. And that's where I really figured it out, because, you know, it was a combination of my own domain expertise, coupled with the fact that we were borrowing the budgets of these larger firms, allowing the agency to also try new things. So we ended up developing many different case studies of what works and what doesn't. And that's, I would say, the pointed genesis of how I started the Same Circle Method was when I decided to go from consulting to agency owner to actually coaching and playing a coaching role to helping those people, specifically interior designers, to really carve out their own paths and set themselves apart from others on social and just using online marketing in general. So that's my road.
Okay. That also sounds like a real story about taking problems or making lemonade out of lemons, right? You lost your job and you turned that into something great. You know, you took problems and turned it into an opportunity. And I'm not saying that happens every time, but clearly, and there was a road and a journey you took, but it sounds like you definitely did that.
Oh, absolutely. And I learned so much along the way, it's been a double-edged sword where I would think that my breadth of knowledge was often not applicable to what I was doing at the time. But also it's a source of strength for me because I do find a lot of strength in knowing a lot of diverse fields and applying that to a top 1% skill set that I'm continually honing and just, you know, kind of sharpening my sword with, right? So, and that's why I feel so passionate about the topic of niching, because niching can really, number one, I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about what a niche is, especially 20 years ago or 10 years ago. There's a new way to think about how you can be different and set yourself apart from others. And I think my passion for that has been derived from so many failures in niching and carving out my own path and learning what works and what doesn't. So that's a source of strength for me.
Okay. So maybe Lori can take what you're telling and make it concrete so people can understand some of the outcomes of your work. I know, Lori, you've had some great experiences with it.
Without a doubt. So as a designer, I mean, we pretty much, you know, work with anyone and anything. You know, we do commercial, we do residential, we, you know, do bachelor. I mean, we work with bachelors, sorry. I'm doing the bachelor pads.
That came out wrong, right?
That really came out pretty funny. No pun intended. So, you know, it's kind of hard for us to see that, as an outsider, like, oh my God, you know, there has to be a specialty, or, you know, just throw the net out wide and whoever comes in is going to, you know, knock on the door and call up and say, hey. So, and we always know that there's kitchen and bath designers or there's a landscape designer, but we really don't think that there has to be a specialty. So personally, taking Bobby's class, I learned that a niche is actually a specialty. And that when you focus on, one, what you love, two, what your specialty is, you know, it makes a difference and you're really targeting a population. You know, so even in social media, people are gravitating towards what you're putting out. You know, someone's going to scroll by or they're going to get engaged and they're going to say, oh, my God, like, you know, we do a lot of beach houses, or we're in Long Island, we're on the beach, we're in the Hamptons. So, you know, for me, it's a lot of beach homes. So now all of a sudden, someone says, oh, I know so-and-so, and they have a beach house, and they're moving, so let's call Lori. And that makes a huge difference. So Bobby's method isn't just about that. He really took us, and there were, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby, but I think there were like 10 or 14 in our group.
Mm-hmm.
It was a journey. It was starting out with exercises and looking at yourself and your personality and, you know, how you go about things. And then, and what really struck out for me was learning how to do a video, because that was another thing. Like, I was getting comments, oh, you're in a bathroom and, you know, the phone is looking up your nose and, you know, and I'm like, well, I'm doing my videos, so what? But it was it was also like capturing your personality and getting it on video and learning how to do the social media. And from the time that I took Bobby's course through, I think it was like 4 weeks maybe, or 8 or 10 classes, and I tried not to think about it because it was kind of like every time I turned around I had homework. But my 207% increase in the people that I was reaching. And then it was a 99% increase in my post engagements, which meant that people were now interested in what I have to say. And for me, that was huge, because it was like one engagement. Oh, that's not really doing me any good. Why am I bothering posting? But now all of a sudden it has my personality. It's something that's coming from me. And it increased it 200%. That's tremendous in a month. So, you know, I really thought that Bobby would be an amazing guest for entrepreneurs because it doesn't just apply to design, even though Bobby, you know, obviously his niche market is designers, but it applies to any business that you're starting, whether it's CBD oils or whether it's mental health counseling or a retail store, you know, because now all of a sudden you're focused and you're knowing what you want, and that's invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And thanks for sharing that, Lori. I'm so happy for your recent progress, and it's only going to get way better and better as you continue to make more human connection on social through just being yourself. And,
right.
You know, for your listeners, it's definitely very much a benefit to know many different people from many different areas of expertise. And, like we're talking about marketing for interior designers, but, you know, that is exactly it. You know, the fact that your niche should be about incorporating many different areas of many different areas of expertise that you can kind of go deeper on and combine into a top 1% skill set. So
Bobby, I want to make sure we first get everyone on the same page. So just so everyone knows, like the theme of today's show is how do you figure out the best niche market for your business. So I'll assume most people know what a niche is, but just to make sure, Bobby, can you succinctly tell people what a niche market is?
Well, I couldn't tell you what the traditional, you know, you Google the word niche and you'll find a Wikipedia answer. It'll give you a very vanilla sort of answer. But I can tell you what most people think of a niche to be, and that is, well, I need to specialize in this one area, and I just need to focus on that one area, and that'll be like the one specialty I'll be known for, and I'll be pigeonholed in there as well. So that is what's most commonly associated with what a niche is. And so, you know, I can also bring up an example of how I, you know, just a quick little tidbit of when I attempted to start a tech startup in several career pivots ago. This was like after I left corporate, I decided to go into a startup with my co-founder. At the time, he was working for Johnson & Johnson. He's a data scientist. He was all about connection. I was all about connection. We wanted to start like a Zoom. Basically what Zoom is today, we wanted to start that. And but what had happened was we were told by investors that we were just too broad at the time and that we wouldn't catch a lot of traction. So they told us to focus on one small group and go from there. And so, but by the time we didn't even get to try that because we spent about $20,000 on a coder who took our money and ran and started skiing on the slopes in Colorado. And we never saw him again. So that's when we had to, I told you, Ted, like we had to, you know, quote unquote, shoot the tech startup in the back of the barn kind of thing, as Kevin Leary would say on Shark Tank.
Right.
But, yeah. But so that was like my heartache with the niche, my first encounter with what a niche actually was and how it applies to business.
You know, and so that's really important, and most people don't want to be pigeonholed, and they're really afraid of taking a niche market or focusing on one. And I remember reading a book about branding, and it talked about this dentist who hired someone like you, and what they said was his niche market was root canals, right? So he was the expert. Like, he was the guy for root canals. He was so well known for doing root canals that even other dentists would send their patients to him, especially if it was a complicated root canal. And so everyone went to this guy for root canals. And then when they arrived, they were like, oh, you clean teeth? Oh, you do filling? Oh, you do cosmetics? Like, they didn't know he did all that, but he was able to service them in any way that any dentist could, but he was just like the Navy SEAL of root canals. So it benefited him. And I forget what the metrics were, but his business did quite well because of that. So he wasn't, in some way, he was pigeonholed as an expert in one niche, except he had a wide range of other services once people arrived there. So you could say he upsold them. Is that sort of what you...
Okay. Well, I mean, that's certainly is an application that can come from this philosophy of properly niching.
Right.
You know, how you service your audience once you niche is really a business decision, and you can either be really profitable or not profitable. And I do think that. That not everybody is going to be, you know, a Michael Jordan or a Michael Jackson in their domain. Like, not everybody's going to be in the top 1% of their domain. Not everybody's going to be that Navy SEAL of the root canal guy. Right. And I think that's okay, because a more strategic way to go about it, because most people would fall in this top 25% where they can apply a few areas across several domains, maybe two or three, combine them, and even create a whole new category. So unless you feel like in your gut, like subjectively, you feel like you are Michael Jackson, like you're the next Michael Jackson, yeah, by all means, like, you know, put all your eggs in that basket, you know, go all in. I think you'll know if you are Michael Jackson, right? Or have the skill of Michael Jackson.
Someone will.
Right. Right. I think some people just instinctively know that they're stars, that they're born to be stars. They're born to do a certain thing extremely, extremely well that's so different from everybody else. And they just follow their hearts, and they go all into this one specific domain, and they'll be successful. And there's a lot that can be said for that. But strategically, what's more practical for the rest of the population is to think about applying just a few other areas, just a few more areas, and combining them to create a whole category. And so, going back to Lori's point about you know, doing video and presenting yourself on social, you know, that is about incorporating your personality. And your personality is an actual area that a lot of people either blunt or don't blunt. You know, they embrace their personalities, so they highlight it more. Others don't. They have a lot of shame around certain aspects of their personality, so they don't highlight that on social as much. But if you think about it from a perspective of, okay, I'm really good at designing. Let's say I'm really good at doing kitchen and bath design, but I also overcame this tremendous depression in my life. And that has given me such a source of strength and such a skill set, a unique skill set that I can leverage and combine with my skill set of interior design that puts me and sets me apart from others, because this is a service that I can provide to others. Others who feel like they are depressed in their homes, or they've gone through so much in their lives, and having that new updated space will just completely redefine their personalities and their identities. That's what you can help them go through, right? It's as much internal as it is external. So that was just, you know, part of the program that Lori went through, where we just talked about like what's in your dark side that you can bring out and apply with your obvious skill sets and combine that and create a top 1% skill set. So that's what that's about.
Interesting. So does that have anything to do with like a customer avatar, or is that very different?
It definitely grabs for those tools, such as, you know, identifying what your demographics should be. I think we all need to understand the demographics and the lay of the land from a business perspective. But we also go into psychographics of that customer avatar. But I think the overall importance of like the end game of having a niche is not understanding it from the objective like point of view, like, okay, this is my customer avatar and he looks like this or she looks like this. She frequents this cafe or that cafe. I know what she likes and dislikes. I think we've all gone through marketing workshops and learned what our customer avatar is for our business and then let it go to the wayside because we're taking on the next customer and we, you know, all of a sudden just forget about it. I think the overall point of what a niche is about what you can do with the niche based on today's parameters. So it's different for your niche is, you can target your niche differently on Facebook than you can on Instagram. Right. And, you know, technology definitely plays a large factor in it. So understanding how you can almost fit your niche into those parameters goes a long way as well.
What do you think people should, specifically in the face of this pandemic, do you think people should rethink their customer avatar this year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know why? Because your customer avatar is you as well. Your customer avatar includes as much of you as it is about them, right? So, you know, like I would say in today's pandemic, pivoting, right? We're all pivoting in some way. We're all finding new ways to sell our services. We're adopting virtual consultations as a new medium, and so on and so forth. So rethinking the customer avatar, I think it's beneficial for us to not only think about the customer avatar in terms of like where the demographics are, but also, you know, looking within ourselves and try and figuring out what those niche characteristics are that we can fold into the customer avatar. It's like going from inward to outward instead of going from outward and trying to, you know, externally put it together.
Right.
And I think this pandemic is also a great time for us to contemplate that because we're all looking inward right now as human beings. And it's a time of togetherness. It's a time of looking inward, and especially if you can leverage this time to rethink your customer avatar in that way, I think it's going to be a very cathartic exercise for everybody in business.
Interesting. Lori?
Yeah, your guys are spot on. I mean, it's a fascinating process. I have no... You know, it's a journey, it's a process, it's, you know, looking at yourself, it definitely, I think, you know, as you go through it, you had asked a very valid question, Ted, so is what your dark side your target market? And it kind of is, you know, I mean, from all my challenges health-wise and, you know, life-wise, you know, the beach is a relaxing, happy place for me, and you know, it's that holistic perspective. So that's who I am, and that's who my target market is. But I had no idea of that until I went through this program.
We've identified so many different skill sets that you have, Lori. You are the modern day Renaissance Leonardo da Vinci. You know, you are the modern day Elon Musk. You're just operating in the realm of interior design. And I mean, it's really funny. It's because, you know, it's really funny because, you know, Elon Musk is someone who has, done well in various domains, yet most of the population, I would say, who's not in business, who isn't privy to what what's going on with in the back end of his businesses, would just immediately say, oh, Elon Musk, he's known for Tesla. Yet no one's going to talk about his contributions to energy, his contributions to aerospace. Maybe Tesla and SpaceX are kind of like side by side, but no one's going to talk about his software side where he was with PayPal and his contribution to starting PayPal. No, that's because that's what society does, right? We highlight one aspect of what someone does well. The fact is that person on the back end probably is a modern day Leonardo da Vinci who just happens to be a niche in our eyes.
Right.
So when I was working with you, Lori, I knew that you were that person, and it's just about helping you to see how you can apply the 2 to 3 to 4 areas into a top 1% skill set. And you're going to express all those great parts of you as you start doing more video and authentically represent those core areas. I really believe it. And it's like I said, your metrics, you're seeing good metrics right now, but you're going to see way better metrics as the months go on.
Well, that's pretty awesome to hear. And, you know, now that I've compared to Elon Musk, the sky's the limit. Ted calls me the queen, so that's a whole other area. So I am Queen Elon. I will take it. Thank you, Bobby.
you deserve every bit of it.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been very challenging, you know, especially I think as business people are changing careers, you know, you identify with one persona and everything is so compartmentalized for so long that, you know, to integrate everything and, you know, to put such specializations together, you know, I can identify with, you know, many entrepreneurs. I look at the profit and I'm like, you know, he runs a camping company and he runs a bakery and he, you know, and that's like Ted, you know, he works with, you know, bread people and he works with the Chase Bank and, you know, and like you said, you know, you did the music industry and, you know, entrepreneurs do that. You know, so when you have that one skill set, to have a coach who can bring you into one persona as opposed to five different personas, it's huge.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
you know,
you
I definitely deal with imposter syndrome, and I think a lot of business owners do. And I can easily fall into the trap of, oh, I'm not an actual interior designer, so I can't coach interior designers.
Right.
Now, I can believe that thought, but is that thought serving me, right? The fact is, I bring other skill sets to this industry that helps the industry move to a new maximum. And I think that's where disruption typically lives, you know, where, you know, people from different skill sets come into an industry and they apply those skill sets to that industry and that industry all of a sudden gets to a new height, a new maximum, right? And that's where you typically hear the story of disruption, like, oh, this tech startup disrupted the industry of, you know, the oil industry or disrupted the, you know, the hotel industry. And where my skill sets come in, you know, like I was in the music industry. I played marketing roles in the commercial design, ran a marketing agency. I dabbled in tech startup land. And suddenly I had a combination of skill sets that few designers could hope to understand without living it. And so, would it benefit me to have deep domain expertise in the area of interior design? Absolutely. But will it be even better if anybody going into a domain where they feel like they have deep domain expertise in that, but also going into it with other perspectives, that's way better. That's way better because that's when breakthroughs happen. That's when you can elevate your own industry.
Right.
Yeah, that's a big word you just used and often abused, the word breakthroughs. You know, I think a lot of people use that mostly in the context of improvements. and breakthroughs, as you're saying, normally the disruptive technology comes from companies that are outside of your industry. I mean, just look at Apple's iPod. You know, technically Sony should have put that MP3 player out there, but they didn't. You know, they stayed with what they had, and Apple came along and did it. And look at the cell phone. Who would have ever thought that Apple Computer would have been making cell phones at any point? And then they just, and right. Then you have cameras on phones. So, you know, all of this, I heard Kodak did create a digital phone. They sat on it and they did nothing. Hmm. So they let the cell phone industry come in and exploit something that they just, they did nothing with. And there are lots of stories like that. Even Apple had a lot of innovation because they learned it from Xerox. Xerox had a innovation division called Xerox PARC, and the computer mouse, the icons on your computer, they had done much of that, even the laptop. But they didn't know how to market it. I guess they couldn't figure out who their niche. Some people say niche, some say niche. They didn't figure out who they were selling it to, so they didn't sell it to anyone. And there you go.
Is Kodak still around?
I think they are hanging on a string. I think they are.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, no, they are, because I think, and this may be threatened, but movie houses still use their film to make movies. Their film is still like that really good quality, and they still use it.
Got it. Yeah.
Yep,
and I think that's international.
Yeah, I just Googled it. They are. They came out of bankruptcy and still exist, but they deal with other technologies.
So their clients are larger clients instead of the mass consumers that they once were known for serving, right? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bobby, maybe you answered this question already, and I apologize if you have, but do you want to talk about buyer persona development, like making sure people do it the right way, or did you kind of answer that already?
I actually didn't go into that. That's a great question. I can definitely go into that. So, before I go into this topic, I want to highlight where I learned my stuff from, which is around the topic of buyer persona development. There's a leader who's championing this. Her name is Adele Rivella. You can look her up. She is known for buyer persona development, and she also has a book. So a lot of kudos to her. And so... Buyer persona development was a service that my agency provided to all the clients that we served. And so no matter what they came to the agency for, whatever the scope and size of that service was going to be, whether we're going to do a search engine optimization for them, social media marketing, or are we going to do video marketing for them? Maybe it's all the above, right? But no matter what the service was, it always started with one thing. And that was buyer persona development. And buyer persona development is that unsexy part of marketing that no one gives attention to, but we gave it attention by putting it as the first mandatory step in the process because it's that important. Not sexy to talk about buyer persona development, yet it's the most important thing in your marketing, Yeah, all your marketing campaigns stem from buyer persona development. So all it is it's about understanding who your buyer is in terms of what their buying triggers are. So how they research your firm or your business online, how they make purchasing decisions along the sales process or pre-sales process. The process actually starts from the marketing side, and the marketing then informs the sales process about this buyer's behavior. And so when you have marketing and sales alignment, that's when you have an organization that is sharing your buyer persona insights between the marketing department and the sales department. Both these departments need to understand the same buyer persona. Like, they need to be sharing the same insights. That's how both are going to inform each other. Like, the sales department can go, oh, hey, marketing, your leads suck. Well, marketing's going to go, why? And then the two departments can have a really productive conversation if they're having the same reference point of who the buyer persona is. Well, this buyer persona is wrong. It's outdated. You know, like, we just hit the pandemic, and now the buyer behaviors are completely different now. So go ahead and research and get back to us, marketing department. So that's how it needs to happen. That's how the conversations need to flow, right? So what the marketing department's going to do is basically call up the buyers, call up the customers, and re-ask them how they're making their purchasing decisions. Oh, are they going to your website, but now they're afraid to actually book a consultation because they don't know if you do, if you operate virtually, or if you provide virtual consultations. You know, like, you just need to find out their step-by-step buyer flow and how
so
they're just informing themselves.
It's almost like understanding, I'm thinking of it two ways, how to navigate a prospective client through a sales process, right? So there's a marketing aspect that I guess people say you pour it into a funnel and then it comes out at the bottom, you know, as one, you pour all this rice in a funnel and at the bottom comes one grain of rice. So it sounds like you're talking about mapping, creating a map of client behavior and then being able to navigate them through the map. Is that, and that's my crude way of my interpretation. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's when a bottleneck happens in a part of the sales process, when the business owner actually realizes that buyer persona development is necessary. So when people are no longer booking consultations on your website due to the pandemic, well, that's the bottleneck because buyer behavior has changed. You maybe need to put out a video on your website and saying, yeah, we actually provide virtual consultations. Yeah, we're sending you samples through the mail. You know, we have procedures. We're doing all these things safely so that we can cater to your needs. Maybe you need to have a message like that. Maybe it needs to be on video that pops up, you know, to on the bottom right, where they immediately go to your website and they'll understand, like, within 5 seconds, like, okay, thank you for updating me. Now I'll peruse the rest of your website so I can actually make an informed decision. So that's when the bottleneck typically is presented to the business owner. And they're like, oh, something's wrong. And so to your point, Ted, yes, you're going to eventually want to map out the entire funnel and have content or, say, marketing stuff, you know, to cater to their needs from top of the funnel to the bottom of the funnel. So I call this different stages where they go from awareness to consideration of your services to decision, making a decision of your services. So those three stages. And you just need to figure out what they're doing at those three stages and then providing content that meets their needs to help them make that informed decision to take the next step from awareness to consideration to decision.
Okay. And do you think most people do that? Or are they kind of
people,
skip that?
People, what they do, typically, Katie guesses, they estimate what they would do themselves if they were the customer, and then they create their content from that standpoint, which is a very dangerous way to go about it. What you should do instead as the business owner is directly talk to your customers, your clients, your best clients, and just map it out based on what they tell you, not what you think you would do if you were in their shoes. So this is where we can get real data to inform our business decisions. And we should make this a habit every single quarter. we should continually call up our best clients every single quarter and ask these same questions. You know, how did you find us, recently, and what were you thinking about before I came across your purview? Like, what was going on in your head? How were you researching about my services before you and I even met? Right, reasking these questions, and then figuring that whole train of thought out. And so, it's essentially, if you boil it down into the nitty gritty, you're interviewing your customers to get answers to what you need to create in order to serve them best.
So let me ask a question, and someone may have this question, and I wonder if any of your clients or even someone listening, if they may collapse what you just said with rethinking your customer avatar. So if when you were discussing the avatar, you really had people look inward at themselves and then look for customers that were more like them. And it sounds like people could actually make the mistake of looking at the way their own map and buying decisions instead of looking at what their customers actually do. Am I saying that clearly?
Yeah, I would say so.
So it's like they're two separate buckets, and sometimes people can collapse them as one and maybe overemphasize themselves when developing a client. It's almost like they mix up the customer avatar with themselves and make the avatar, personal avatar, their buyer persona development.
It's you know, at the end of the day, when you have a business, you have a paying customer. And at the end of the day, you're looking for people who will pay for your unique skill sets, as weird as you are. You know, if you are championing a cause or a charity, and that's part of your growth model, like that's part of your business model for selling socks, or, you know, like Tom's, they got the charity model, right? Like, that came from the owner. I'm pretty sure that was a part of the owner's life. Like, that's what he's all about, that he incorporated that into the business model. So then what did that do? That started to attract people who are as quirky as the owner is. And we can use, you know, replace quirky with another word, a better word. But the point is that when you get to the stage where your business actually has found the paying customers, turn again and again, who gravitated towards your weird parts of you, that's when you have the best case scenario of finding a niche, because you can still be yourself. You've also created a new category because you incorporated yourself into your product, which is necessary to stand out. And you have developed paying customers, and those paying customers aren't just paying for that same skill set that every other person has. Right. They're paying for a skill set that only you have, because you brought in those extra quirks to it. So when you start the exercise of building a business from, okay, what two or three or four areas can I incorporate into and combine into a top 1% skill set, and then find a paying customer, well, then you'll have a duty to start interviewing actual paying customers who have paid for your unique skill sets. And then you just kind of, recycle that process.
I want to kind of shift gears. We're coming into a close. Are there any social media opportunities that people are not considering? Like, could you give at least three examples or three social media opportunities that you think most people are overlooking and not considering?
That they're not considering. Well, I can think of one off the top, which is well, now that you ask, I can think of a couple more. But I think Lori can also in the same circle method, but I think one thing that not a lot of people know about social is that a lot of people are marketing from their personal profiles and not know it.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of where the chips are starting to fall. Like, it's starting to aggregate towards the personal profile. The personal profile is a representation of your personal life, authentically representing what's going on with you as a person, and you're combining that with your business. So there's no more separation between business and personal. Now it's like it's mm-hmm. folded into each other.
Right.
And that's what the personal profile accomplishes. So you're talking both business and personal, and you're just authentically representing both aspects through the personal profile. And I think the main reason for that is basically because Facebook business page started showing less and less content to a business's followers. And it got to a point where less than 1% of your business page followers would start seeing your content. So now you got to be an advertiser. Okay. You got to pay to play. Huh. And so now people are going to their personal profiles, but I don't think that's caught on as much because if I were to ask the next 10 people about like, where do you think the most advanced marketers are playing? They probably won't tell you. They're playing on their personal profile.
So Lori's business would come from her personal Facebook page. And that sounds like that's what you've done, Lori. And you've, 200-300% increase? It's from your personal page?
Well, it's been I've been cross-posting. Because I initially started with a business page 100 years ago, and then I had gotten the personal page. And then when I noticed I had more followers on personal, and then you were supposed to have it on your page, but then I just started cross-posting. So people, they would say, oh, let me see, check out her personal page, and let me check out her business page. So it's kind of a split on a 50-50. So I've noticed that they follow me in both places. So it's not all from, they go back and forth.
Do you post
and I make sure I'm consistent on both.
So they're duplicated, the two different
yep.
pages, or do you put, okay.
And
yeah,
I also really like this, and I think I've also been telling Lori to start like packing her bags from the business side to the personal profile
right.
and completely like operating from that realm. And it's going to be a transition, of course. But I really like how this is kind of playing out because we're all getting into our stuff now, and,
right.
and so, if you've been politicizing everything from sun up to sundown on your personal profile, well, guess what? It's time to clean that up. And
mm-hmm.
maybe you don't want to shine too much of a light on politicizing everything.
Right.
I'm not saying don't be polarizing or anything, but I am saying that, your personal life is as much a part of what's going to attract your clientele and your customer base as the product and service that you're selling.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So,
Bobby, we have 4 minutes left, but I would love for you to talk about the value of videos.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The value of video, I think everybody I think everybody can understand intrinsically what the value of video is. And I'll just touch on a few things around what it means to me and how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
So the value of video is really important, especially for the industry that I coach, because it's the industry that I coach is predominantly about growing through referrals and word of mouth. So while that is still a great endeavor, you should definitely have a big referral base, best clientele, and your ideal clients. You should also seek to have a predictable way of growing without relying on your referral base and your word of mouth, because that's not predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't predict it as much, especially if your referral base is small to begin with. And what if you wanted to, try out new services? What if you wanted to try out different ways of servicing your audience? Well, all of a sudden you're restricted to your referral base, who is only used to you doing things one way, and you can't really creatively express yourself. You can't grow as a creative. So this is where the video really comes into play. It allows you to take a straight shot into building the know, like, and trust factor with your prospective clients. When someone immediately sees the first 5 to 10 seconds of your video, they're immediately noticing you furrow your eyebrows, you crack a small little partial smile that didn't fully blossom to a full smile, and these are all little nuances of your personality that people catch on quickly, and they relate. And once they relate, like in the blink of an eye, they're able to go from know, like, to trust. Sometimes can happen very quickly, and sometimes they'll need to see more of you, but the more they binge watch you, the more likely it is that they're going to eventually know, like, to ultimately trust you. And so video is fantastic for that. You also want to be cognizant of how video is being consumed right now on social media. I've heard someone bring up this saying where you want to think about people consuming video from the perspective of the toilet seat. So because the stats really just spell out the fact that that people are typically, they got short attention spans, and they're watching your videos without your captions on. I mean, they're watching your videos without your sound on. So, these actions or behaviors are typically indicative of the fact that they're sitting on their toilet seat while consuming your videos. And so that's where that toilet seat kind of perspective comes to play. And so what's happening is that all the marketers are creating videos that are providing captions, and they're accommodating for the short attention spans by creating by superimposing a headline onto the video, so that before someone invests their time to watch your video, they're seeing a headline of what the video is going to be about, and they don't have to turn the sound on because you got captions on the video. So that's all catering to the person on the toilet seat. And
so hey, we're going to run out of time, Bobby. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah. You can get a hold of me, through Facebook, my name, Bobby Sui. My last name is spelled T-S-U-I. I think I've gotten so used to spelling my last name for the last 36 years of my life. But and then I'm also on Instagram. I just started the account. I'm not really that well-versed with growing my Instagram account, but you can follow me there. It's at the Same Circle Method. And you can also email me.
What's your email?
Awesome. And I'll I'll post it on my social media as well.
Okay.
And my email is bobby@bobbysui.com.
Perfect. Very fascinating. Great stuff. Really fascinating about the toilet seat analogy. Never heard that before. Thanks for sharing that one.
It was a pleasure.
And
thank you, Bobby.
Pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for all the listeners. And we'll be back next week with another fascinating guest and talking about your business. So have a great evening, everyone. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.